Mr. City Attorney John Mulligan is here. Councilmember Jeff Hales is not able to make it tonight.
And of course, our esteemed senior planner, Ms. Kennedy, is also with us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't forget.
We've been talking all day. Sorry, Mary.
All right.
Man, I feel like an idiot.
So let me find my notes. Since we have one and only one piece of business this evening, let me ask if there are any public comments that are not attached to on non-agenda related.
There were none today, no.
Okay, thank you. All right, we have this evening is. We have one and only one item of business, and that is a work session on a proposed mixed-use development at Del Mar and Leland. The applicant is Local University City. A public hearing is not required, and a vote is not required. So this is really a working session. It is intended to allow the applicant to introduce their proposal and obtain feedback from the commission prior to submitting an official application to rezone the property. That would, of course, occur at a later meeting. After this initial work session, Subtext will meet with the surrounding neighbors to get input on the development. And so we anticipate one more work session here with this body to give an update on what the neighbors said. And so with that, I'm yes.
The minutes?
No, we did not receive those. It was not in your packet.
Was
in your packet?
The draft.
Yeah.
So I sent the packet for the work session on Friday, and then I followed up yesterday with the minutes for for May 31st and June 28th.
Okay.
But we can postpone that to the next Plan Commission meeting.
No, my apologies. We have more than a quorum. Are there any comments or revisions to the May 31st minutes?
John Wagner's name is misspelled.
All right. Thank you. And correction, are there any other omissions, additions, or errors to be corrected?
Yes, on the
On the May 31st.
Oh, on the May 31st, yeah.
All right, so with that, hearing no objections, the May 31st minutes are approved as presented, pending the correction of the spelling of Dr. Wagner's name.
It's DR, period.
Let me see, the June 28th minutes. Any additions, corrections?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
So that was, the July 25th, that was where I was supposed to, under the comprehensive plan outreach schedule.
Okay. Okay.
Other additions or corrections?
Mr. Wagner, Dr. Wagner's name is in on that.
Once again, Dr. Wagner's name is apparently misspelled.
Oh no.
I'll answer the most anything, so it's
okay. let's hear it for auto correct. Okay. All right. Given those corrections, the minutes are approved as presented with those corrections. All right, so let us get started on this working session. And with that, I will turn it over to Mary or John. Do you have any introductory comments that you want to make?
No, we'll keep it brief. We've been meeting with this development group a couple times to help them understand what the process is to go through plan development. There will be a few applications required for this project. So plan development, preliminary development plan, which is part of plan development, subdivision, because they would be consolidating 4 or 5 lots, a conditional use permit for a potential parking reduction, and then, and we can talk about this last part a little bit more during the working session, but potentially some text amendments. There are some conflicts in the code that need to be addressed that seem a little bit in conflict with the character of development that we think we've been hearing, at least through the comprehensive plan, is, you know, appropriate for the Loop. So we can talk through those potential text amendments as we get into it. But they relate to a buffer requirement for plan developments when they abut commercial properties. And then there's also a increased setback requirement when, let's see, when multifamily is abutting or adjacent to commercial. So that would affect 2 property lines. The buffer requirement of 30 that I mentioned previously would affect 2 property lines as well. And so those are the 2 things that we'd have to kind of discuss how to deal with.
Okay.
To get this project to go forward.
Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Ryan Bohm with Subtext. We have Mitch Cordy with Subtext here as well as Neil Reardon with ESG Architects. And then we have Josh Barkas behind us with Stock and Associates. We're our civil engineer on the project. So appreciate you having us here tonight for the working session. We have met, like Mary said, with her and John a couple times now to understand the process and the particulars of this site. We've also met with council members Hales and McMahon as the ward representatives for this. So really appreciated the input we've got from them. We've already been able to incorporate some of the feedback that we got from them into what we're presenting to you guys here tonight. We feel like this is a very special opportunity for the city. It's a high profile site. It's, as we all know, it's currently vacant. And Subtext, with us being a local company, a lot of us know, I mean, we've spent a lot of time in the Loop. We know this area and we know, you know, what it means to the city and what it can be. And so we're really excited about the opportunity to contribute a piece to that. Go to the next slide, Matt. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, which slide do you want me to be at?
Sorry, is this the version out of the thumb drive?
Oh, no, is this? It should be. Yeah, it is.
Oh, no. Okay, well, we will work with this.
Wait, let me double check. Sorry about that. Oh, you know what?
I accidentally
added both to the same document. Okay. Sorry about that.
So we did this. This will be very consistent with what you received in your packet. We're just expanding it a little bit.
Okay. I would very much appreciate getting the latest so that we can incorporate it into the minutes. The last time we had one of these that got updated for presentation here, that presentation is gone. We never received it.
Okay.
And it was the prior presentation on this particular property.
Mm.
So I think we need to be very careful to make sure that we have our hands on this.
Okay.
Thank you.
So as said, Subtext is St. Louis based here. Our offices are in Midtown, and about 80% of our team resides here in St. Louis. So we're excited to do a project in this market. We develop multifamily housing and student housing around the country. We've developed 5,000 beds and another 7,000 beds in that are in development right now. You can go to the next slide. So what we're planning here is under our local platform, The local platform is our multifamily brand, and we really seek to deliver rental properties with hospitality mindset and experience-based design, and these are targeted at young professionals. We seek dynamic locations. We're renting by the unit. We're focusing on delivering cost-effective but luxury kind of boutique-style multifamily. We differentiate these properties, particularly with branded fitness, resident spa, co-working and collaboration spaces, and then we really try to carry that through the operation of the building. We schedule regular community dinners, volunteer events, and group outings for the residents. So the goal here is to create an experience for the residents, not just create the building and let it go. We want to carry that through the operation of the building and just carry that mentality beyond just the completion of construction. I'll go ahead and let Neil provide an introduction for ESG.
Sure, Neil Reardon. I'm with ESG Architecture and Design. We are headquartered in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but we work all over the country on urban mixed-use projects like this one. So they're right in our passion zone for doing good urban design, doing quality buildings just like this that are transit-oriented and build density in cities. So we're just really excited about working here. We've worked elsewhere in St. Louis with other clients in Clayton, St. Louis, and Kirkwood, and a variety of places in the market here. Very excited about this project here in University City. We're a firm of about 125 people, been in business for 40 years, and like I said, work in many, many markets across the country in 40 states. So.
After some of our initial discussions, we laid out a few community benefit goals, and these were sort of items that we identified to help guide the process as we've been advancing this. First and foremost, we wanted a community-focused retail component. So we're planning over 8,000 square feet of space within the building, all fronting Del Mar. These are intended to be high-quality tenants, you know, similar to what you see along the loop, and we're incorporating lease steps and size of retail to accommodate those high-quality tenants. We also identified the goal of having an enhanced pedestrian streetscape as well as a sidewalk dining experience. So we'll show you some images of what we've got in mind to achieve that. We like this site as a unique opportunity to provide urban residential within UCity. And we're going to provide a variety of unit types, two-story townhomes all the way down to studio apartments. So a nice variety of types to attract multiple types of tenants. And then, you know, finally, like we said, it's a redevelopment of a vacant site. It's a suburban style building. We're excited to bring some renewed vitality to this block. And then we also see it as an opportunity to sort of close. I think this was Councilmember Hale's comment of it's sort of a retail desert here if you're walking along the street. You get to vintage vinyl and all of a sudden you don't see anything for, you know, 500 feet. You don't really want to keep going. Part of our goal here is to, you know, kind of create the vitality that'll let people continue on down and expand the scope of the loop. And this is consistent what I think the initial discussions of the comprehensive plans have been for an activity center for this location. So we've got the infill development. We're supporting mixed-use development with the residential and the commercial components. And I think a big one here, as we'll see, is the reduction of surface parking. I mean, I think it's well over half surface parking currently. And so we're excited to kind of create a more vibrant use here. You can go to the next slide. So here's an aerial just for some context. I think we're all familiar with where the site is. The entire loop is accessible within a 10-minute walk. You've also got additional amenities within the half-mile ring, which is the inner ring that you see there. You've got Forest Park just a half mile away, Lewis Park a half mile in the other direction. The Schnucks across the street here is a half mile to the north. So it's just really well located, both for enjoying the loop and for enjoying the amenities of the community. We've identified that the bus, trolley, and Metrolink stations, so it's well connected to multiple varieties of transportation. And we really see it as an opportunity for a live, work, play location. And so it feels like a good opportunity to achieve that. Go to the next slide. Here's an aerial of the existing conditions. You can see the surface parking here, and then some street level views looking down Leland there, looking along Loop South, and then the view along Del Mar. So this is really the focus of the project here. Go to the next one. So here's our proposal for a site plan. We're bound by the Witch building there on the west, and then Del Mar, Leland, and Loop Street south. We'll share some streetscapes in a second, but really trying to plan a lot of undulation there along the Del Mar frontage. So you've got varying widths of sidewalk, varying types of building uses to really make that a dynamic streetscape and enhance that with street trees and landscape plantings. We've also got some landscape plantings on Loop Street and Leland. Go to the next one. We'll zoom in here to the first floor. So kind of working our way from east to west, what we've identified as a restaurant space to really guide this, we see this as a prominent retail opportunity. So we're programming over 3,000 square feet of retail here. And the really exciting part here is this courtyard just to the west of it. So that will help break the block up, the length of the block. It'll create gathering space for the community. It'll create a really unique dining experience for the patrons of that space. And I think that'll really set it apart. The goal here is to attract people, you know, serve the community, and attract people from outside the community simultaneously. As we move down, we've got another retail spot programmed. Following beyond that, we've got residential. These are planned as two-story townhomes with stoops that enter out onto Del Mar. And then they've also got entrances back to the parking garage behind it. So really unique opportunity to create a residential experience, but also convenient at the same time. Moving down, we've got the lobby and kind of entry amenity space there. And then on the other end of that, again, we don't want to create any of these retail deserts, so we're programming another smaller secondary retail space to kind of bookend the building on that side as well. Parking is all behind there, so this is showing all structured parking, covered parking with the building above. So we'll move up to the additional floor plans here. There's those townhomes we referenced. So this is the level two where the parking continues up. And then if you see on the spaces where it says open to below, these are all planned as double height spaces. So it'll be really interesting as you walk into that restaurant space, you'll see high ceilings. It'll be really great experience. And go down to
As a point of clarification, so you have parking on both level one and level two?
We do. It's a double height space, so it kind of acts as one level. When you're looking at it from the street, it kind of looks like one level that's a double height space.
Okay. Yeah. I just wasn't sure whether that was a view or a section.
Yeah. All right. And then we do have about a half a level, I believe, of parking that kind of goes that ramps down. So it's three levels of parking total. So here we go up to the level three, and this is where we're showing our resident courtyards. We'll have a pool deck and some amenity space, get that south-facing pool where you get the sun shining in, and then a couple more passive courtyards that are facing north overlooking Del Mar. And then if you see on the right side where that courtyard is cut back, that's where we have that patio dining for the restaurant. So
on the street level.
It'll be street level, so that courtyard will overlook that. And so people who are dining will have open air all the way up, and people who are out in that courtyard, they still get that street activation. It kind of connects them to the street.
So that patio will be part of the restaurant space?
I think we're open to how that gets delineated, whether or not we want to carve a piece of that out for, you know, just people passing by. Yeah,
okay.
You can put some seating there. So right now I think we're flexible with exactly how that goes. And then we'll flip the next one, just has the typical unit plans, unit floors. So these carry all the way up through. So we are planning seven levels total. So these are 4 through 6. The next level, 7, is just set back a little bit, which you'll see in some of our renderings that we'll share.
Did you
want to
be on this slide?
Yeah, so okay. We go next. The resulting building is, like I said, 7 stories, 314 units, over 8,000 square feet of retail space, and 410 parking stalls. And then there's that additional data for your information as well. So I'll pass it off to Neil here, and he'll kind of walk through the design evolution and where we've taken this so far.
Sure, yeah, you can pivot to the next slide there. We like to do a massing context diagram sometimes just to kind of set the stage for what you're gonna see in detail here in a second with renderings and site plan information. But this kind of sets the heights of some of the surrounding buildings and just kind of how this thing fits into its immediate context. So you can see there, you know, our height will be between 75 and 85 feet. And you can see the noted heights there of some of the other buildings in the vicinity. Next slide. We can certainly come back to that one as well if we need to. So what we're looking at here is that site plan again that Ryan had on the screen a moment ago when he was speaking. And I want to focus on two areas here to kind of think about what's the urban design approach, and is it feeling right? Is it the right dimensions? And is it, is it creating the proper street activation with its dimensions and its scale? That's really what we're after in doing these projects well. And Del Mar is our primary frontage here, so we're going to focus in two areas there. So next one. This will be what you're looking at here is a large boulevard plan near where that restaurant patio is that we were just talking about. So the restaurant space at the northeast corner of the site is noted there. And you know that space is about 50 feet deep in its retail depth. And then the patio itself is a little less than that. But what we wanted to show here is really how the transit stop bulbing out of the curve that you see there on the top part where it says near where it says the Del Mar label. I want to show you the dimensions of that.
Is that already present? Is that stop is there now?
That's right. That is a built condition right now.
Yeah,
we're not proposing that those curbs would be changed really in any way.
So we're showing there's an additional 15 feet that we're providing there.
I see.
And above and beyond the
Yep, so for context, the red line there is the property line, and so our building is back from there, and then we have a 10-foot clear walking zone that you see there on the left. Mary, I don't know if it's possible to zoom in a little bit there. My eyes are blurry, I guess. and then a little bit to the left. Yeah, so that 10-foot clear dimension, even where we have trees out in the boulevard, would carry all the way through. And then that boulevard itself is between 5 feet and 6 feet about from curb to the sidewalk. And that's really what we call the furnishing zone, and that's where the trees would be, the bike racks, if there's any benches, things like that. Those things that are going to be streetscape enhancements to the boulevard. And then you can see the bus stop pops out to about 12 feet, and then, you know, backside of where the fence is right now, if you're familiar with that, there's a fence there kind of segregating the transit stop from the sidewalk. That new dimension will be about 15 feet in that area. So, and then now all that's to say that then the retail boulevard offers an additional dimension of setback at that location. And then what we like to show here is kind of just a section at those, so you can visualize, you know, what that looks like in proportion to the cars on the street.
Oh,
the looks like we went one back. It's okay.
No pressure.
So what you're looking at here is these two sections. This is a section cut right at the patio where we see that additional 31 feet of patio depth. We still see the 10-foot sidewalk and then that furnishing zone that I talked about that's between 4, 5, and 6 feet with the scale of the vehicles in Del Mar. The other section below that we can probably go to next. This would just be what's that condition like, you know, in section cut there at the restaurant space. And you can see the heights there and, you know, the scale, kind of human scale there with the person walking the sidewalk. We can go to the next slide, I think. This would be another area. So this is further to the west, and what we're demonstrating here is what is it like at those townhouse walk-up units. So we have walk-up stoops, which are partially inset and partially outboard. So you can see that gray area in the stoop there. That's partially back inboard, if you will, and that's for some a level of privacy for those residents. It's also a good way to just delineate public-private. So this whole transition is about having an active street with doors and people coming and going, but also offering a level of privacy and safety for those residents so that they feel comfortable living there, and everyone's walking by, quite frankly, feels comfortable with how it's set up. So again, that clear walk space there does go down to about 8 feet at places, and then we use some of these intermediate areas to soften it a little bit with greenscaping, which you'll see in some three-dimensional images here in a moment. And again, those sections that show what that looks like at the walk-ups at the top section there at the townhomes, and then below that, and you can see actually to speak to the level of privacy, you can see the condition where we are raising those townhouse units. We like to call it the bowl of cereal rule, where if you're walking by on the sidewalk, you shouldn't be able to see into somebody's bowl of cereal on the inside. So it's about privacy, but it's about safety too. And safety for both the resident and the pig person on the street. And then this other condition would really be, you know, where we're coming in right at grade, just to the west of here for our main residential lobby. And so we're building right out, you know, close to that lot line, close to that property line. So those are the sections and kind of the enlarged plans. I think we got a few other things to go over here. What we wanted to show you next was just that full street section, so you can see kind of what that scale looks like. So on the right is the Leland street section with actually the building that's to the east. So we would be looking at our building on the right-hand side in gray, and then the building just to the east of Leland right there for scale. So that's like a two-story building.
That's vintage vinyl.
Vintage vinyl, exactly. Thank you. And then the other section is the Del Mar section. So this the things on the other side of Del Mar vary in height from relatively the height of our proposed building to the height of a one-story. It varies along that long dimension. But what we want to show there is just the scale of the width of the street in relation to the sidewalks and that planting furnishing zone that I talked about. Excellent, thank you. And then I think we have some precedent images here of just this concept of level one of a mixed-use building when it transitions from retail to townhouses or back and forth to the different uses. The whole goal here, as Ryan said, is to make an active frontage all along Del Mar. That's what we're after with this project. And these images here are snippets of ways that those things transition from residential lobby to townhomes to retail and back and forth amongst those three components. And I think there's a few more slides of the similar approaches. So you can see here how some of the architectural delineation starts to happen, where there's, you know, there might be some stone in there, but the level one's really more active. It's more glassy. There's that storefront component, certainly for the residential lobby, but also for the retail. So that's where you get that glassy part. And then when you switch back to townhomes, there's a little less glazing. Yeah, and that's important because you don't want that full storefront. Again, privacy and safety issue. All right. And then just a few more images here of some of the architectural design precedents that we have used in our discussions so far in getting us to where we are with our conceptual design. And then I think we can go right to some renderings. We have a few to show.
Yeah, I think the goal here that we've been trying to strike the balance between traditional building types that you see along the loop while still providing a sort of modern take on that, so that hopefully it fits in well, but it still provides a modern building and all the elements that can be achieved with that.
Yeah, so you know, materiality comes to mind first, and then the massing. You've seen the floor plans already, and so you're kind of understanding how the massing looks. If you want to put up the first one, we're just going to kind of show you these, and what we're going to do is progress from east to west, actually, just along Del Mar, and we'll kind of zoom in and zoom out, and then eventually we'll see one from the far west side. So the primary facade facing Del Mar is, in its materiality, wants to be, you know, a masonry brick materiality. So what we have there is kind of this medium tone, kind of red brick with some balconies at four different modules there. And then that, as Ryan already mentioned, that seventh floor is stepped back just to kind of give it some relief and give it a head. Buildings are kind of anthropomorphic, head, body, and feet, and that's the way we look at these things. So that's what's happening up there at the seventh level with the stepping back and the materiality change. And then the base, the first two levels, or as Ryan described it, it's like one healthy, you know, first floor base, it's 20 feet, is more of a lighter stone material. And so we can go to the next rendering, and I think I'll show that in a little more detail here at the corner of Del Mar and Leland, where that's a lighter stone base, and then it's interrupted with those storefront windows, like I was talking about before. We kind of have these four modules of brick, which we think is a nice rhythm facing Del Mar. They're proportionally not, it's not symmetrical or anything like that, but proportionally they sort of replicate each other and march down the street. And we think that's a positive approach, particularly with some of how the rest of the buildings across Del Mar. There's a building, then there's a void, then there's another building. So it's kind of working off of that partie. Moving a little further west, here's a rendering from the courtyard just right across the street from where that patio would be. So you can kind of see the upper kind of passive courtyard that's up there at level three. And then what we've done is tried to provide kind of a beautiful screen wall for the backdrop of that space. We already talked a little bit about what that space could be. So we've filled that up with people and trees and other things that we believe would be really make it a successful space off of the retail, and really sitting between a restaurant bay and a retail bay with an access point back towards the parking. Let's see, you can kind of see the transit area there. We know that's a public transit stop, and they'll be looking forward to working with all the parties involved to shape that as part of how our project's interfaces, you know, directly with it, just right there at the corner. Let's see, next one, I think there's a couple more. Oh, so this one very much speaks to the townhomes, the sections that I was talking to you about before, where you can see the stoops are set up. This is at the east end of those townhomes, so they're a little higher off the street because of a grade change. As we go further west, there's a few less steps at each townhouse. But this is kind of the spot where we're almost 3 feet above the sidewalk here. But you can see how we're planting out in the boulevard in that, what I called the furnishing zone a moment ago. That would be where the street poles are, the street lights, all the other furnishings, and then these planted boulevard zones with trees in them, which is a similar condition to what is on Del Mar today. And then really that, again, going back to that inset balcony, half inboard, half outboard, creating the level of privacy and publicness of these units.
I'm kind of spoiled. I get a really good view of everything, and the projector isn't great quality, so sorry.
How many bedrooms did you say are in the townhomes?
We haven't decided on where exactly there would be, you know, two bedrooms, one bedrooms, and potentially three bedrooms yet.
In the townhomes?
In the townhomes, yeah. So there'll be a mix, and we haven't decided that just yet on like which unit is which size at which one of these doors. But that'll be something we'll be flushing out as the project develops. Yeah. I think what we do know is there'll be about this many entries to the townhomes themselves that you see on the plans.
And all these are rental units, not for purchase.
That's correct.
What was the question?
They're all rental.
Yeah, so marching along a little bit further west, we do have the spot where we actually don't have as much of a void between the last two modules of brick. And what we've done there is kind of infilled that, and this is an opportunity for us to do a few more balconies that face Del Mar that sit there in this lighter portion of the facade in between. And then what you see there where it says local is actually the main residential lobby to the building. You know, that's really the point of arrival for people coming there to do a lease or for any visitors to the building if they arrive on Del Mar. And then lastly, the small little retail bay that you saw at the very northwest side of the site is again in this lighter colored stone at the base of this part of the building. And there's one last image. Yeah, this would be an image with the two buildings that are directly to the west of the site, kind of seeing those in context. We do have a pretty good break in between. Just right at the west side of our building, we have a couple utilities that are going to go in there. So if you notice that on the site plan, there is a separation. We're not building directly adjacent to the building you see there in the foreground. So that's about six images that we wanted to show you, and happy to talk about feedback on those or anything else related to the site plan and to sort of how this interfaces with the public realm.
Great. Thank you.
All
right, are there questions from commissioners? Ms. McQueen.
What you didn't show us is like the concept. Talk about the concept design for the different unit plans.
No, we were just, they were there for informational purposes, and we're happy to discuss it.
Okay. You know, because in some of the plans, you show a bathrooms that were without tubs. Do you have any comments on that?
We generally will go anywhere from 50 to 75% of the units with showers, and it kind of just varies from there. So we'll end up with up to 50% of the showers and 50% of tubs in some cases.
So on that, I want to just follow up because with Pat's question about the tubs, the project is multifamily, and if you have a three-bedroom unit and you have three bathrooms with showers, young family like Ryan's, you need a tub. So if some of those three bedrooms could have two baths and one bathroom with a tub, the larger bathroom, it looks like that would not be too hard to do.
Yeah, we actually, if you see in the design, there's usually a blockout included. If you see, if you can flip through that, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It's 29.
Yes. 30 for the
page 14 on the.
Well, as an example on 29. A lot of times we'll design these where it's shown as a shower, but there's actually a dead space there next to the shower. if you look in like the left of the two bedroom unit. And the intention of that is to be able to put that as a tub as well. A tub actually fits in those exact dimensions.
Oh,
but that's not the case in the three bedrooms, though.
No, you're correct, and it's something we can certainly.
And I have a follow up to yours. Still on the tubs. This shower. Actually, I like the shower separate, but I agree with you about having tubs. The thing I know from a friend that is somewhat disabled, somewhat senior, a shower is good because I'm wondering about the width, if you're able to get into a shower. I have a feeling that sometimes designers forget about that, and it's becoming more and more clear with our demographics that there are folks that need to be able to wheel into a shower.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. There are a number of units that will be required to be what's called type A units. And some of those will include, the proper handles and things like that, so you can get in and out of a shower or a tub for that matter. And then a true type A unit, once in a while, will require a roll-in shower. And so if those are required, there will be a number, probably a small amount of units that have that ability for those people that have a level of accessibility needs. So, and then just to buttress what Ryan said, there's optionality for tubs and showers in these projects, and because we have 300, we have a lot of units, right? We can provide that optionality. So when someone's coming out of lease walk, it's usually availability of each type.
In the existing facilities you have around the country, how has your allocation of tub or no tub units proportionately been received by your tenants or the general population of the cities where you are already exist? Are you finding that your preliminary thoughts on these are pretty successful? Or?
Yeah, and what we'll do and why we like the optionality is we'll let the market information that we obtain throughout the process ultimately guide that decision when we go into our final construction documents. So we'll be getting that feedback from the people we go out and talk to.
From the local market. So will you survey residents within a mile of this or 3 miles or whatever? How do you go about collecting that?
Usually with the relationships with the property management groups of the existing properties. So we'll go in and talk to the people who are operating existing buildings and get direct feedback from them.
I don't believe there's much of that existing around the loop, though.
We also, just to chime in, we also do focus groups. So we'll have a company that goes around with iPads, and they'll stop people on the street, and we have a list of questions that they would ask. And one of them might be, would you prefer a tub or a shower, or what kind of amenities would you want to see in the building? And then we collect all that data, and that goes into the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, not just information from around the country, but
yeah. Okay. Thanks.
First of all, I really appreciate the process that you guys are going through. It's unique, and I think it's great to get feedback and have sessions like this, so thank you. So a couple of questions. One, on the parking, which I don't want to really get into in depth, but I'm curious to know, and this is maybe a question for staff, how much of the parking behind that's going to be taken away? I'm assuming all the parking are for residents. Is that a correct assumption?
No, the parking that's included in the plans,
yes.
There's a portion of that will be private for residents, secured, and then there'll be a portion that'll be for visitors, mostly for those residents, and then there'll be a portion that'll be for the commercial spaces.
Okay, great. In this area. So I think it's gonna be really good for us to understand how much of that parking was for other parts of the loop. How much of that parking is used on an ongoing basis right now?
Of the existing parking?
Yeah, the existing. Just, you know, are we going to lose parking for other businesses down the loop? Do people park there?
I don't know.
I don't either. I don't think to a much of a degree at all, no.
Yeah, because I think the parking that's there is private parking.
Yeah, it's for the buildings that's there, the Commerce Bank.
Which are vacant, there. But they're still private parking.
We have a resident who would like to chime in on that.
It's not used for the loop. Most of the parking for the loop is in parking lot 4 behind Cicero's. The parking on the Commerce Bank lot is not used.
That's what I was thinking. So we're not losing any parking spaces. Okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. So I don't want to talk any more about parking. not a fan of parking. I noticed on your drawings that there is a retail bank.
That's correct.
Is that already definitively known?
It is not. It's
Do we need another bank?
it is a placeholder for now.
Okay.
In our plan. All
right. Yeah. And then my third question, I think at the beginning you talked about shared space, I think, for work. Did I get that wrong?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So where is that in your kind of lobby area, and is that specific for residents as well?
Well, probably, what are you on there? 10?
Yeah, probably number slide 10 would be the best, or combination of 9 and 10. So if you see there on level 3, it's really yet to be fully defined, but these would be in those green zones, so there's potential for it to be there on level 3. And then if you go down to page 9, which would be kind of the street level plan, there would definitely be potential for in any of the green zones for those spaces. We haven't honed in on that because usually we get our site plan set and then eventually program in more detail those interior pieces.
Okay. Yeah, just curious about that. I think common space for small businesses, people who are running businesses out of their homes, et cetera, is always something good to think about. I don't know if it's a good fit or not, but just
it's something we do in I want to say 80% of our projects that are mixed use like this, where people need a place to take meetings, whether that's in person with someone comes to the building to visit them, or if it's like a digital, you know, virtual meeting, right? And there's a variety of types of spaces for that, ranging from a conference room where you 4 people sit to a person's just by themselves in their own little telephone booth kind of thing. So that's very hot item right now because everyone's trying to understand what do the next few years look like for working from home.
So we're actually working with ESG on a project in Phoenix, Arizona, and we've programmed it where you can actually rent the office. And so if you want to put your actual, you know, branding and everything in there, you can do that and it can be yours. I don't know if we'll do that here, but it's an example of the things we've explored.
Right.
As a reminder, we have an entire building of rented office space available at the Del Mar Harvard site right on Kingsland, within half a block of this property. So you may want to go back and dig through our minutes and find the plans for that hotel and the adjacent building that will be all shared workspace. So just in terms of market assessment and what the potential is.
Can I ask, is the co-working space intended for just the residents who live there, or as an amenity, or is it public co-working space? Like I could come in and work
for
there.
For residents only, for security and preference.
It's just for residents, okay.
Right.
Please, one. I know we got away from parking. I'm not going to talk about parking. But where, if we had a bike, where would the bike spaces be? That's one question. And two, I know we saw the rendering of the front, but what's in the back? Because that's facing the residents behind.
behind you.
Behind the building. How's that going to look?
Sure. I'll speak to the first one. If you want to zoom in on the lower right of this area, we think there's a natural spot here for kind of a secondary lobby because the building is so long that we've located, and we have an elevator there, which you see in yellow.
Yeah.
So since there's an elevator there, and since the building is so long and the other entry is at the northwest, we thought, well, there's probably needs to be a secondary entry at the southeast. That's a natural spot for a bike room, as well as for some bike storage. So you could store your bike in this green zone, but that's probably where you come and go with your bike is what we think. And there are a variety of other spaces within the gray zones of the building where we'd have different types of bike storage. So some people could have it at the front of their car if they have a stall. Some people would have it in a room on one of the parking levels in a secured room where they hang it on the wall or use a bike rack block, just wheeling it in at grade. So there's a variety of ways to do that. But ample bike parking is what the market is looking for.
And our code specifies
exactly
bike storage.
Yep, and I think we had it on the numbers page as well on how many bike, our target for bike parking stalls as well. So.
And I don't want to take you off of your comment, but that the retail loading and retail treasury, those are things driven by the code as well as our preferred programming. But we've tried to incorporate as much of the code into this now so that we're not walking back at a later date.
That's right. The second part of your question, I'm sorry. How does the rear of the building look? Yes, thank you. We thought you'd ask that question. We haven't went as far on the rear side of the design on the south facade, if we want to call it that. If we go back to one of the renderings, I think you can see kind of the end caps and some of the architectural language that is in the, call it the non-brick areas. So you can kind of see there on the left-hand side of this page what we're starting to do for rhythm of windows and materiality on that portion of the building. So it'll be different than what you see on Del Mar. In a future session, we very much plan to come back. We wanted to set the framework on Del Mar first, get feedback there, and then further develop that backside. But as a sneak peek to the backside, it's some more of that language.
And but the backside has an alley, is that correct? And then it's the rear of the homes that face.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the loop south,
loop
which
south,
it
yes.
serves as
yeah.
practically an alley. For
yes. Okay.
And then it's
those, yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, and then it varies between 2 to 4 story buildings. That you're correct.
Yeah.
They have
and
the
there
back.
There are a lot of garages.
A lot of tuck under garages
that people have that would face the rear of your building.
No, not really. What's back there is. Washington is quite a bit higher than Del Mar. So you have a very tall retaining wall that the home, the multi-family,
oh, right.
basically,
okay.
I would say 80 to 90% of those homes are transient students. They're multi-family owned by WashU and or private landlords rented out to students. I would say 80 to 90% of them. And they're very much higher because you have this huge retaining wall. Then you have another alley behind that retaining wall upon which there are parking lots and garages. So there's quite a bit between the back of this proposed building and the backs of the Washington multifamily.
Thanks for that, and I should have. Check
it's a
out.
Very strange sort of configuration.
Thank you, Siri.
Can we talk about
I'm sorry.
Well,
with that in mind, but can the neighbors in the next block, I mean, if it's 7 stories high, can they see?
They will be at level with probably the third or fourth to fifth floor. Up there, I would say.
Okay.
Can we look for a second at your loading and trash areas? Is your I'm assuming that your loading area is for deliveries?
Well, yeah, if you go to, let's do page 9 again, actually, would be the best. And there's kind of two areas. There's retail loading down in the southeast corner, which was what I was speaking to and Ryan alluded to a minute ago. That would really be for the restaurant and the other retail space that are on the east end of the proposal.
So that's next to your trash area?
What's that?
Is that the space to the left of your
trash area? Yeah, so on the far west then, there's additional space for this. So residential loading would happen with its own curb cut there at the very southwest part of the property where Mary's highlighting right now. There would also be a curb cut for a ramp for parking just to the east of there. So yes, that's very much residential loading. And then there's a large trash room for residential trash just to the north of that. And then you can see there where we say move in, the yellow zone is kind of a move in zone that takes you right to the elevators. I think that's answering your question.
How do you get, so at the southwest corner loading area, that's for residential loading?
Yep.
How do you get the trash in and out?
Right.
Of the property? Same loading area?
We'd use that loading area and cross through. There'd be some double doors or overhead doors where that trash would be able to come and get service.
Those your trash chutes for the building?
Yeah, those black okay. Zone that you see there. Just
so trash truck backs into the loading area, gets his or her stuff and goes.
Right, and usually at this phase of project, we're not certain exactly how the pickup happens, but we've provided a framework here for it to take place.
Right. Yep. Okay.
And we've reached out to providers to understand the requirements and we'll incorporate
them. Yep.
Good, thanks.
And then I do want to point out as well, if you look, there's the transformers, and then just north of that, there's sort of a cut in the parking stalls, and that's intended as a drive loop. So when you pull in, we want to take Ubers off the street, we want to take food deliveries off the street, we want to take as much as we can off the street so that those are not crowding. And so that's the intent of those. So that's all open to the public in that area. Visitors drop off and visitor parking is intended for that area right now. And you can go in, loop around, there'll be access to the lobby. And
it takes you to the back side of the lobby is the idea. So it's not, all those things aren't happening on Del Mar and mucking up Del Mar, or for that matter, causing access problems on loop itself. So off the street.
So how do the townhome residents access the move-in area?
Yeah.
Since it goes right to the elevators.
It does go right to the elevators. There would be a passageway there that would take you through the lobby to that where that yellow corridor is behind. And they would have, in addition to having their street side door, these townhome units would have a rear door as well from a corridor. So it's not as convenient to move directly through the lobby, but they would come in that way and then make their way to that yellow corridor that's on the back side of their units.
Thank you.
Mel,
do you have any additional questions? You said yes or no?
No.
No, okay, thank you. Al?
So, I would like to know, so you're going to own this building, right? This is your building.
That's correct.
Are you going to manage it as well?
We will, yeah.
And I looked at your company website and I see that you have many, many properties near universities that you've built, lots. And do you hold on to them? Do you sell them to other people?
Mitch, do you want to answer just like the evolution of that?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I'll start by saying we have sold properties to only private companies. So we haven't sold any properties to universities, I think is one question that was probably coming.
Yes, it was.
And then just to, yeah,
it
just
was a big one. I was trying to be subtle.
Yeah. So we have sold a handful of properties, but they have been to other large institutional investors. Going forward, our goal is to hold everything long term. So we typically partner with an institutional pension fund or someone like that on most of our previous projects. They've been able to dictate whether we sell at certain points or how that goes. Going forward, our goal, we're in the process of raising our own fund, so we wouldn't be able to make those decisions. And you know, our company, it's a pretty young company. We've grown from, I've been here 7 years, we've grown from 5 people up to 50 at this point. So we've reached the point now where we've raised our own fund, and now the goal is to hold all those properties long term. So.
Okay. Let's see. I have a couple little, these are probably way down the line, but I know that you, I see that you have a, it's a long facade, oh, but it's north facing. Never mind. You know those slats that are not shutters, but they're sunscreens that, but since it's facing north, it's not an issue. And I'll just get you on the native plants later.
Helpful to know native
plants. Yeah,
we could add a whole courtyard of them, but
yeah.
Just a question: have you guys? I'm assuming you guys know that we're going through a 20-year plan. Mm-hmm. And have you guys reviewed where we are today and what's in that plan?
We've been tracking it the best we can. We were. We had some of the feedback from, I think, the open house last week, and have included, I think, the activity zone of the Loop, the kind of principles that have been in there, understanding that's all in draft form, has been part of what's guided, I think, us and what we feel like supports this type of building. So we do hope, and I mean, we want to track it, we want to be a part, I don't know if we want to wait for it to all be.
No, I just, it's available online. Yeah, we have been tracking. I just wanted to make sure that, like, I'm sure you did. Yeah, I just want to make sure that you guys at least see where we are today, because I think there's some relevant points. Yeah, for us as designers, it's really helpful to have those guide documents, even if they're not in the formalized finished draft form, if you will. Super helpful to cross-check us on what we like to do anyways.
You mentioned the two issues that were going to be an issue for zoning.
Mm-hmm.
Can you highlight those?
Yeah, sure. So we're recommending that they go through plan development instead of keep the core commercial zoning and do CUPs and stuff like that. And so with plan developments, there are requirements for buffers. So there's plan development residential, there's plan development commercial, and then there's plan development mixed use. So this would be plan development mixed use, but the code doesn't go into a lot of detail about plan development mixed use. It says you kind of have to, you know, find the right balance between PDR and PDC to get your standards. And so one of the requirements for plan development residential is a 30-foot buffer. Okay, it's a 30-foot buffer when a PDR abuts commercial or industrial districts. And not to get too in the weeds, but it abuts a commercial district on the west property line where which is. And then it technically also abuts on the north and east property lines because our definition of abutting includes the street. So that would be a 30-foot buffer on those three sides. And then plan development commercial has a, depending on how we interpret it, that also has a buffer requirement. So there could potentially be a required buffer on the south property line. And so, you know, based on kind of the existing building stock in the Loop, given that it's more of an urban environment, many of these buildings were built before those types of standards existed. They don't feel like appropriate standards for this type of development. So that's the first one that I was alluding to, the 30-foot buffer. Yep. That would really hem in the area of the site that could be built on.
Yep.
And kind of take away from the, like, activating the streetscape that Neil was just talking about. And then the other is in our supplementary regulations, it's a whole separate division or article of the code. There's an increased setback requirement when multifamily abuts commercial, actually. So that would be, again, on three property lines. So that's the other code standard that we'd have to find a way to, I don't know, maybe create some kind of exception for the loop, since that doesn't seem like an appropriate character for the loop. And then there are additional supplementary regulations for elevator apartments. Those are separate from the zoning districts. So elevator apartments, which is what this is, has their own dimensional requirements. But the supplementary residential standards have a clause that says the only types of developments that can deviate from those standards are planned developments. So that gives us some flexibility with those standards.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have two more. Sorry. What's BOH?
Back of house.
That's what I thought. Okay. We're contemplating putting all your life safety equipment, common area equipment, sprinkler, fire sprinkler stuff. Or am I getting way too ahead of the game?
No, we do think about those things. We make sure we have the proper, again, areas framed out at this point. And, so a lot of those are at the level, if they go back to, number 9, slide 9 is our popular one tonight. So it would be at this level, and many of those need to be accessed street side. So they're at the street level. They'd be in these gray zones in various locations.
Okay, I figured.
Okay. Mr. Harvey, did you have any questions? Ms. McQueen.
Mine's is not, it's technical, but just the multifamily, just to think that when we're thinking of that, it's not just always young professionals or students. You're going to have adults in active 55 plus that might really like to live in the building. So, think of those when you're designing, especially like the common areas and stuff, because that's truly multi-family and I think multi-generational.
Right. Well, thank you for that comment. Yes, I've worked on many projects that are active adult, what's usually called, and senior projects, and make the proper accommodations and realizing that everyone's not a 25-year-old in terms of how they use the space and even their units is important.
You might be able to help us on this one, as it's back to the parking. It's been an issue for us in looking at several large apartment type developments. Have you learned that these ratios that you're proposing are pretty consistent in terms of the operational? Workings of your previous projects? The transit, this is not a big transit city.
Right.
It's just not. We wish it was. It's just not. We're on the way to that, we hope. Forget the trolley. The loop trolley is not real. It's a folly. But the question is, you're down from 599 to 404 in the combination of the transit and the CUP, the CUP. Have you found that 404 to 314 units and 371 bedrooms is pretty consistent with what's actually worked in your other projects, or does it feel like a stretch?
No, it feels, it's actually a little heavy compared to the current projects that we've got and what we see, which are more of a one-to-one per unit. that worked for us. And then in this situation, we've also got the opportunity for the shared parking as well. So just reserving just for the units, one-to-one would be sufficient.
So you would advise us to be thinking more in terms of something closer to one-to-one in this kind of development in this community?
Yeah, and we've talked to try and target somewhere in the 1 to 1.25 is kind of what we've talked about.
You're at 1.15 to 1.3057 between bedrooms and units, so it's right in there, 1.25. Yeah.
And I would like to pick up on her comment about the new comprehensive plan, and I think as a plan commission, we should be not thinking about what we have on the books today with regard to all these regulations, but our brain should be 15 years from now, and how does it fit with our vision and the new comprehensive plan? And I think that that will open us up, and one of the issues clearly is the parking, and hopefully that will have fewer cars.
So related to that, right, one of the things that as we think about the future and trying to create more green space, our current requirements are total site coverage of 70% maximum. And so this may be a question for staff about how we're going to calculate site coverage, because clearly there's lots of parking on the first level, but you get three levels up and that's all building. Yes, there are some exceptions that can go up to 90, but this looks like more than 90 for that site.
We calculated it and we are at 89.67.
So you're counting on getting the exception from the 70.
For the exceptions, we
you
are.
Thought
we've
about
identified
on the roof.
We identified a handful of them, and we look forward to working with staff.
So site coverage is going to be a challenge. You could probably gain some points if you have specified permeable pavement and plazas, etc. That always goes over well with this group, as I recall. The other thing that is, I was going to ask is, I'm assuming these are all market rate?
That's correct.
Okay, so, one of the things, if you've looked at the comprehensive plan, you understand that University City has a history of flooding. And part of the plan is to try to create space for those residents who live in the floodplain and move them out of that. But market rate housing is not going to work. So your business model may or may not include the potential for any subsidized units, but certainly that is another thing that would line up with the comprehensive plan and where we would like to be in 15 years. Let me see, I was gonna ask. Oh, entertainment space. As I looked at the floor plans for the 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, I didn't see a place to have a table and put four people around it to have dinner. And so in terms of the amenity spaces, and I've, my own personal experience with this multifamily where there wasn't that kind of space, the only two rooms that were available for parties for residents to reserve at the holidays get really full. And so you may want to consider either looking at how to make each apartment more welcoming, not just the street, right? Or including more entertainment space in your amenities, especially since there will be so much rental office space that is so close, right? Um, other thing, you know, again, there were issues against the current setbacks and vehicle access kinds of issues, but trying to look at the future. I went back and looked at some of the cases that and developments that are currently in progress. And so, for example, Avenir has 262 units, 502 beds. They range from studios to two bedrooms. And their floor area ratio is 1.05. That was controversial in front of this commission, right? If I look at the McKenzie, their floor area ratio was 2.1. That was a real hard swallow, as I recall, from this bunch of commissioners. And your current, the floor area ratio that I found in your package was 3.71. That's pretty intense. And so, yes, we have said we want higher density. However, are we willing to go to 3.71? And that is more a question for the commissioners. That could be a tough sell here. I'm just saying.
No, I understood. We'll just leave it at, we feel like the Loop is a special place, and it's differentiated from some of the other parts of the city. You know, we are not, what we want for these retail spaces is not what they want for the market at all. What we want for our residents is not necessarily what they want at Avenir. So I think that's kind of how we frame the overall project, and that's the opportunity in our eyes.
Yeah, so again, it's McKenzie, it's Avenir, it's just looking at the rental spaces that are currently in development in New City, much lower floor area ratios. As a reminder, the demographics of University City, we are 27% over the age of 60.
We're wise.
Yes, we are. We are very wise. But in terms of, you know, this local market, there are a lot of folks who are geezers like yours truly, and who, in terms of, as we talked, you mentioned the Type A requirements, you know, adding just grab bars to the other showers might be very helpful, right? Just some minor adjustments could make those rooms much friendlier to our local population.
Sure, I can speak to that just a little bit. One thing I didn't mention is, you know, all these units are kind of designed as Type B units, which means that they're convertible. They're able to add those shower bars for folks later on in the project, 5-10 years down the line. So there's the ability to have flexibility to suit, say say the building's full, somebody comes along and they need that, that can be added at a later date just to buttress that comment.
Thank you.
Door widths, that kind of thing, are those also universal design?
Yeah, we found that it's pretty standard now. I mean, we're not, in projects, we don't do doors that are, you know, 2'6" anymore. They're the standard widths. We're not narrowing those down. They comply generally with the standards of universal design, where, you know, people won't be inhibited by a narrow door width.
Maybe charging stations.
Yeah, we've been 5% is our standard, and then we try. You have to work with your utility provider, but we try to be 25% ready on day one, so we could 5% installed, 25% capable. Is the goal.
Oh, good.
So you're ADA compliant?
Yep. I mean, we'll be required to by the building code.
Right,
so
right. And just for the record, she was speaking for herself. A couple of her comments here about old geezers.
Yes, I am speaking for myself.
Those bars.
But it is important that you brought that point up, because let's
say someone wants to downsize. We were trying to keep our residents within University City. We want to downsize from your four-bedroom, two-story home, you know, your empty nesters. You still want to have an urban feel. Let's say you want to go back to what it was like when you had your first apartment. You wanted to always have an urban feel. So they might be looking at them.
I don't want to go back to what it was like.
Intergenerational, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Very good. So, just a suggestion, because there's a lot to think about with what Peggy has mentioned. It would be really helpful. You had listed two things that were definitely out of code, but I think there's going to be probably a list of four or five very key things that we need to discuss. That we need a list of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, we'll absolutely provide that. And I don't want to jump ahead too much, but you all are planning to come back to Plan Commission at the August 16th meeting to provide an update. They're going to do some outreach with the neighborhoods, and then I believe the plan is to come back to Plan Commission with an official application at the September meeting, so September 27th. So we'll be preparing that analysis, kind of like go line by line in the code and like make anything that's technically not compliant, you know, put it in red and bold and make sure we can discuss that.
And the hard thing here, it's got to be in the context. I think it should be in the context of the 20-year plan. Mm-hmm. And we know that we have to change zoning codes, mm-hmm, to adjust.
And that's going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
Early next year. So.
Yeah. Right.
So,
but that doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help. Yeah. So we change it ahead of time, based on this, and then.
Yeah. Or need to think about how we want to change it and what the loop looks like versus Olive looks like versus our nodes look like.
Right.
So maybe it's a couple options, looking at what would be required specifically for this project to work, and then, you know, what those ideal standards would be for the rest of the loop, and kind of do a comparison.
Yes.
Because I don't want to jump the gun and try to rewrite the code right now, but there are some things that do need to be addressed for this project. So I think it could be helpful to have kind of a side-by-side and some idea of what those eventual code updates would be.
Mr. Subcommittee Chair.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Yeah.
I've approved all of that.
Yeah.
So what point does, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The previous plan commission, the previous city planner always would say when we would give a permission for a CUP or something, is this something you want to have as set a precedent? Because if you approve this, then, and so with this project and the two ways you're saying, looking at this, then we can sort of not jumpstart, but say, yes, this is the kind of precedent we'd like to set according to our proposed comprehensive plan. And so I think that it's a good way to move into that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yep. Mr. Hogan, you were wearing your I have something important to say look.
No, something important. But I do have some questions.
Please do.
So the city has a maximum of 3 unrelated occupant ordinance. Do you see any issues with that with respect to this development?
No, not at all.
And since you're going to be managing the building, would you be monitoring that to make sure that there's no violation of that ordinance?
Oh, yeah, I believe so.
And then with respect to the parking, the assumption is that there's going to be a 25% reduction under a conditional use permit, and setting aside whether this qualifies or not, I think there, at least at this stage, there's an assumption that it will qualify, and presumably there will be a parking and traffic study that presented to support that request. Is that going to be coming at some point?
The traffic study is in progress, and my hope is that we can present the results of that on the 16th of August. We had a kickoff with the city's traffic engineer, I guess, along with our consultant, CBB. And so I think that they all felt really good about that. So hoping to present that in August. With regards to the parking, they were not able, I think that having it compared to similar projects, either of ours and that we have operated, or other projects in the area, was determined to be the best way to go about evaluating the parking. So that's what we're trying to do. There was no other expert parking analysis that they recommended when we had that kickoff call. So I think that that's been our approach. We've tried to keep that dialogue with John and Mary.
So my experience has been that the consultants usually not only looking at other projects that a particular developer has done, but there's certain industry standards. Is that correct? Will that be included in this as well?
The consensus there is that the industry standards are not consistent with what you would want to see.
Is that because the tenant there will be atypical, or no, is it just the industry standards are
Because they're based on a larger, they're out of date based on a larger sampling size that would include, you know, a suburban type of development, and they were established years ago. So the
type of tenant there, though, would be relevant to an analysis of parking and traffic. Is in other words, if we're dealing with, say, a Washington University student or any other university student versus maybe somebody who's working not in the immediate vicinity but maybe has to drive 5-10 miles to the place of appointment, recognizing that we're more and more people are going remote, but still there will be a difference between, say, a student who can walk to the university versus somebody who's driving to work or elsewhere. Are you making certain assumptions in that regard when you calculate what you believe your parking will be and what you believe the traffic impact will be?
No, we're using our other multifamily developments and then precedent from urban context such as this when we make those assumptions.
Go ahead.
And yeah, so it's our other multifamily projects.
Do those other multifamily projects have this number of students that will probably be renting? Are they close to universities and would have the likely percentage of university students who would be renting that this one would have?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah, I think this location's somewhat unique. I mean, we have a deal in Boise, Idaho, that is just across the river from the university. And we do get some, I'd say it's comparable to this. And we do get some students, but the building is programmed as a multifamily property. So I think what Ryan is saying is when we look at the parking, we're focusing on it as a multifamily use. We understand this based on proximity. We're probably going to have some students, but that's not driving the programming of the project.
Because my experience has been that with these parking and traffic sites, there are certain assumptions that the author has to make.
Well, for traffic,
and those assumptions have to have some relationship to the reality of what this project is really going to be and what the use of the property will be in the tenants.
Yeah, in traffic, there are specific requirements or standards for whether it is a student housing or a multifamily project. This will be based on the multifamily standards, which are typically a little bit higher trips because you have people coming and going more. Student housing is much more people come and they park their cars and they're walking, so you don't get the AM and PM traffic coming and going. But I think that our traffic study will be more multi-family based, so you'll probably see a little bit higher counts than you would see on a standard student housing traffic study.
So I suppose we'll know more when we see this thing. Lastly, are there any challenges that you're facing right now with respect to this property? We talked about some of the code changes that may be necessary. We talked about parking. Anything that's concerning that we don't know about?
Interest rates just went up again.
Yeah, right.
Okay. No, I'm just kidding.
He said that we're interested in them.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think we're super excited about it. And yeah, it's been a great start. I think it's been really collaborative. Mary and John have been great to work with. And so far, I think we're heading in the right direction. We really appreciate the feedback. And I did want to mention, not as much for the people in this room, but anyone you talk to, we actually will set up, or we have set up, a project website. So we'll upload the renderings and we'll keep a timeline of when the meetings are coming up, and we'll actually have we'll post some questions on there about maybe what would you like to see as a community member as far as a restaurant, or what kind of retail would you prefer. So that'll go on over the duration of the project, and if we can send you guys the link, so you know if anyone reaches out to you, you can at least tell them here, go to the website, and we'll provide updates as we progress.
Yeah, other questions from commissioners?
We could have an on-site manager.
Yes.
Full time.
Yes.
Live on.
What's that?
Live on site.
Not live on. No,
but full time. But you'll be set up for 24/7, like right now, help response.
Someone will be on call.
Yeah.
Other questions? Hearing none. Gentlemen, thank you for your time this evening. Commissioners, thank you all. And members of the public, thank you for your level of engagement. Unless there is other business, hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Mary, is this your